More on critical incident stress and how responders and hospital staff are struggling to recover from the aftermath of the Orlando nightclub shooting. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast, our podcast for EMTs and paramedics everywhere. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's show. This week on the show, we continue our discussion about the trauma and incidents that are suffered by providers in and out of the hospital when encountering mass casualty incidents, specifically the incident in Orlando. This is a two-part episode, and this is part two of those two parts, where we have critical incident stress expert Dan McGuire from CISM Perspectives on the show to talk about the advice he's giving the hospital staff and the responders down there in Orlando. So we can talk about that, and that'll come up later on in the second part of this two-part episode we started last week. So stay tuned for that here on the MedicCast in just a bit. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure we just cover a few bits of introduction here. Make sure you're checking out the links and additional information that are available for you in every episode's show notes over at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode, or you can scroll down there and find previous episodes as well. There's also a search box there on the upper right-hand side if you're looking for something in particular. So take some time and follow up on what we talk about in the show so that you understand how it might apply to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you've checked all the stuff out and you want to get back in touch with me, I'd love to hear from you. Make sure you do so. Email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments and questions on shows, or you can send me suggestions or interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well. So please keep those emails coming. That's it. We'll go ahead and get on into our contact information and other things at the end of the episode. So let's go ahead and get ready for the special segment with Dan coming up in just a sec. In this upcoming segment with Dan McGuire from CISM Perspectives, I continue the discussion started on last week's show and talk with Dan to get his input on the very real stresses and more being suffered by all the responders and the Orlando Regional Medical Center staff down there who dealt with the patients and the dead from the recent nightclub shooting at Pulse Nightclub. Now, this is a two-part episode. It's audio only, and we have Dan sharing the advice he's given to the responders and the ORMC Human Resources staff to help them manage the aftermath of this terrible event. Check it out, and remember, if you haven't already listened to it, go back and check out part one of this segment that's coming up that was available last week in last week's episode. Next thing that occurred to me is something else they mentioned was that the hospital had received calls of support from hospitals in Boston that dealt with the bombing there,
right.
Hospital in San Bernardino that had dealt with the recent events there. Even a hospital in Paris had contacted them to lend, to give them emotional support saying, hey, we understand, we are here for you. Why is it so important to share these experiences with others who have gone through them?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that you know you're hearing from somebody who has gone through very similar events, and you're hearing the same thoughts that you're currently thinking, and you're hearing that same message from someone who's gone through the very similar type of event. And that really helps validate and normalize these individuals' shock value, the anger, all of those tremendously difficult to manage emotions. When you can hear that type of support from somebody who's gone through it, that can take the edge off what you're experiencing. But again, the big thing is that affirmation and that validation that you guys are doing everything that we did and you're doing it correctly. And knowing that a hospital from Paris is calling in and giving, you know, emotional support, and just anyone who is hearing that, even secondary, hearing that, oh, you know, the hospital from Paris called and are thinking of us and are telling us how they did it, and the hospital from San Bernardino and Boston. That is such a powerful emotional support that's going to keep you in the game. Yeah. And it's going to be able to help you put that game face on and keep it on. But my worry is, and my caution, talking to the one of the hospital administrators yesterday, is, you know, this event is not going to be over in a couple of days. This event is going to be going on for quite some time. And I cautioned them on a term that I came up with after September 11th, what I call CNN stress, is to encourage your people to get away and stay away from the news reports and the newspaper. And you don't need to hear this over and over and over again. And that was a very important point that the administrator took back, that she had just never thought of that, that, you know, we all naturally congregate towards these type of newscasts, and we want more information and we want to know more, but there is a point where we get so saturated and constantly reminded of what we saw, what we heard, all of the carnage that was in front of us, the blood and the screaming for help, and you have to be able, as I told her, tell your people to take care of themselves first. They're not used to doing that. You and I, Jamie, are the same way. We're used to taking care of our patients first. Mm-hmm. Always putting them first, second, third, and we come in maybe a ninth or a tenth. What we have to do is break that habit and put ourselves first to start the recovery process and to be able to understand, what did I experience? This was an abnormal event. This was a completely out of the any measure an abnormal event. But everything that I'm feeling, everything that I'm thinking is absolutely expected and a normal response to a very abnormal event. And again, that was another message I gave to the administrator to pass on through all the staff, that you have to start taking care of yourself the minute you get off shift. And I also cautioned her, after an event like this, and depending on some what we call pre-trauma factors, and one of the big pre-trauma factors was, A, this was an intentionally caused event, not an accidental event, and B, what type of support do these hospital staff on the job, but more importantly at home, and do the family members know what to do with this loved one who went to work as their loved one that they know and love for years, but they come back in the door a completely different person, and oftentimes family members are at a loss and desperate for any information of, what can I do to help my loved one? And that was another thing that we talked about at length. And in fact, that was some of the literature I sent down to her to make sure that was getting out to everybody and anybody that was both directly and what I call secondary directly involved in this event. Because as emergency providers, we are very very much control addicts, as I'll put it. We know what we have to do. We don't even think, we just simply do. And then when we get back to our home environment, our family is naturally going to almost smother us with support. Let me help you and tell me how you're feeling, what happened. And quite often what we need to help the families to understand is, here's what you need to do, but more importantly, here's what you shouldn't do to help your loved one to re-enter and to be able to, in a healthy process, and not using maladaptive coping skills such as alcohol and drugs and other things to recover from this in a healthy, forward type of manner.
Yeah, and you know, the like you said, I mean the entire region of Orlando around there, the responders, we're talking hundreds, maybe up to 1,000 people are going to be dealing with the trauma from this, from direct involvement, whether you were one of the people attending the event, attending the nightclub and witnessed the horrors going on there but were uninjured, whether you were one of the injured, whether you were one of the 911 call takers, responding police officers, responding fire and EMS, the hospital center, the hundreds of people involved in the response at the hospital center. This is going to have a profound effect on that city for a long time to come. And I thank you so much, Dan, for coming on and sharing some of your insights as to what they can do and what they can expect to have happen. Because like you said, this is not over. This is going to be an event that stays with them for their lives.
Yes.
And they may resolve it in some way internally so that it can be, you know, looked upon in somewhat of a better light moving forward in their lives. It's not going away.
It isn't, and that's something that is a very important message post-event support is, and as I told the administrator, is that, you know, this is going to be going on for several months, but also I cautioned her on, when you get to the 1 year of anniversary of this, that is going to be a very difficult day in their lives as well, because it's going to bring back a lot of remembrances, memories, past emotions, and so forth that have finally settled down and into sort of the cupboards of your mind. And all of a sudden, the press is talking all about it like it was that day on the 1 year anniversary, and that can take people right back to that day, to the point that their job functionality becomes affected.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we talked about with the administrator, I said, be prepared for staff turnover. Yeah. Without the correct, timely support measures, and it's not just one and done. You know, you have support measures during the acute phase, the post-traumatic phase, and then for the weeks and months afterwards. And if that isn't done correctly and correctly, without forcing people into it, which I absolutely abhor. You should never at any time mandate anyone to sit in on a debriefing or a diffusing. I won't even talk about that in my programs that I teach. That is such a a horrible thing to do to somebody. But I told everybody to be prepared for some staff turnover, because there will be people who are going to say, you know what, I thought I knew what I was getting into when I signed that application, but because of pressure from loved ones and because of the intensive memories and the very great possibility of PTSD symptoms popping up with people and actually having to be treated for PTSD and other anxiety disorders, they just may say, you know what, I'm going to go find a doctor's office that I know I can go in, do my work, and go home and know that I'm going to be safe.
Yeah, and it's made doubly difficult because they have to go into that place where it all happened. You know, in EMS, you know, we may have a scene that we drive by. I know my kids joke about it because I talk about the dead houses around me, because right. they're the places in my community where I've had a dead patient. I just remember them and I note them as I drive around in this small town community, rural area that I live in. I don't say anything out loud often, but I see them, I notice them, I check them off. So that is, you know, there's something to be said for not having to actually go back and work for a 12-hour shift or longer in the very place where you experienced the trauma to begin with.
Yep, and that's where they're going to need to rely on, you know, their per diem staff and part-time staff, because, again, for those people who were there in the beginning were probably there for up to 18 hours, as I was told, just completely immersed and just being overwhelmed by what they were having to observe and do. And the next time a trauma patient comes in, there may be somebody in that trauma center who has not recovered fully, just says, I can't do this, and walks out on a trauma resuscitation, perhaps.
Right.
And that's another whole set of issues and problems that just simply piles on the what's at hand right now. So, again, there's a lot of work to be done, but it can be done successfully with the right resources, with the right attitudes, and hopefully this hospital has a very much an open door policy. And what I mean by is, after my 5 years in the ED, that if there was a point that there was a patient that came in that just simply was outside of your comfort zone, you were able to move over to another case, perhaps. And you know, as a board certified grief counselor, that's going to be another whole avenue for them to be very much aware of for all of them, fire, EMS, 911, hospital, everybody. Everybody lost something or potentially somebody in that event.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people maybe even lost their innocence. And, that's something that we need to properly grieve about. And again, if those resources aren't there and somebody to help them down that path and to do large group instruction or make sure the debriefings and diffusings are being done correctly. And the other thing that I caution the administrator on is a very big important change within CISM is it's no longer the tick of the clock when we apply this. It's the psychological readiness of the individuals or the group.
Right.
Because in the old days, we would just run right in and do what we did. But the research that came out of September 11th taught us a very hard lesson that we have to make sure that we allow the individual's own coping mechanisms and skills that they already have, and that toolbox that they carry every day, that they can dip into that. And by doing that, that re-strengthens them in both an emotional and in a psychological way. And if we come in and start doing grief sessions or our defusings, debriefings while they're using their own methodologies, we're interrupting that natural, normal process, which is just going to push these people right back to the start line again.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, I know that everyone that was not in Orlando at the time working, our hearts and our thoughts and prayers go out to that entire community. We all know that this is a situation that could have happened to any of us in our communities, in our line of work. And it is something to bear in mind that, the days of having a critical incident occur involving one or two patients and, maybe a dead child or something like that, causing the activation of a critical incident stress team to help a small group of people deal with the stress that they encountered on a scene, it has now changed to all too frequently involve hundreds of responders and healthcare professionals involved with multiple patients in one of these active shooter incidents. And so, Dan, people like you are going to be very valuable commodities, for lack of a better word, moving forward, I think, unfortunately.
It's a commodity that I give freely and from the heart. I don't do this for the money. I do this because I want to see my brothers and sisters that are out there to still be able to stay on the job and stay healthy while they do it. The suicide rates that you and I have talked about, that is I am very concerned about that with the responders, all the responders down there, if they don't get that correct help, and especially if they are already dealing with any type of previous PTSD or anxiety disorders. This is going to just explode that out to the outer limits. Just to step back, when we had the four firefighters shot on 12/24, mm-hmm. The two that died and two that survived, our county CISM team was literally called within the first 2-3 minutes. And we worked solidly for a week just handling the initial needs. And with a line of duty death, one of the parameters that I teach is, you don't even do the debriefing till after the funeral is over.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, applying all of these mental health, grief, CISM protocols and support measures is extremely important on a timely basis. And not everybody is going to be ready to sit down and talk about this all at the same time. So that was a big caution with the HR representative that I spoke to is, this is going to take you easily a year to sort of get back to a sense of, and what I caution her, you are not going to go back to normal after this. You're going to have to go back to what I call the new normal.
Yeah, it's before the incident, after the incident. There's nothing that goes back the way it was, right?
No. And how do we rebuild that new normal? And that's what we're going to talk about on a conference call next week. What do we do now? And how do we go forward from here? Because, again, this is going to be for all those affected by it. And the one thing that I do want to make sure that's clear with all the listeners, Not everybody is going to need great depths of assistance, because some people just have a higher tolerance level and coping mechanisms that, and again, those folks shouldn't be forced into something that they simply don't need. But again, the unfortunate the unfortunate commonality is a lot of people get overlooked because the standard line comes out, "I'm fine." And there's an acronym, F-I-N-E, that I have that I unfortunately can't say publicly, but it I won't say the first one, but insecure, neurotic, and emotional are the last three of that. Yeah. I'm fine. So what fine are you? And that's certainly something that everybody's going to need to be watching each other for.
Yeah. Dan, you know, there are a lot of people listening to this from you know, hospital systems, from EMS systems, from other response units and systems out there. Where can they find you on the web if they want to maybe relook at that manual that they don't know where it is?
Right.
You know, where do they meet? Where can they find you to maybe bring you into their system and help them prepare for the possibility that this could happen in their area?
Well, very easily. We've got a award-winning website. It's simply our company's name, cismperspectives.com.
Okay.
And we also have a presence on Facebook. And I'm even willing to give out my cell phone number, because as I told the administrator, I'm 24/7 for you guys. And that's 585-739-9011. And I know there's other hospitals out there that are wondering, are we going to be next?
Right.
And with the hospitals that I've worked with, once they looked at what we developed compared to what they had, it was a positive, embarrassing moment for them.
Well, let's hope that more systems and hospitals and facilities out there are taking advantage of this opportunity to learn from what happened in Orlando and be better prepared in case it happens to them. Dan, thanks again for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure. I'm sorry it's been so long. We'll definitely have to have you back on again soon to talk about some of the things we touched on briefly, like line of duty death and responder suicide. So we'll have you back on another day to talk about that.
Well, Jamie, I'm humbled by being asked to be on today's program. I hope there's something that people can take back from what I've talked about. And, you know, I'm just here in Rochester, New York, so I may be next door to somebody who needs assistance with this. But it's truly an honor to be able to talk to as many people who listen into your podcast. And we just have to take care of each other. And this is my way of helping to do that.
All right, Dan. Well, thanks a lot. We'll have you back soon.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/medicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.